Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, incorporating Mazda's customer-centric vehicle design by making the customer the center of business to create a better car buying experience. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.
From 90.7 WFAE, this is Charlotte Talks. I'm Eli Portillo, in today for Mike Collins. 2024 has been another wild year for real estate. Of course, it feels like you can say that about pretty much every year since the pandemic started, when prices shot through the roof, interest rates dived through the floor, and many assumptions about what it takes to buy a home went out the window. And that's just the residential market. The commercial market, which includes apartments, retail, and office buildings, has had its own struggles and price swings. So what does 2025 have in store? Joining me this morning to break it all down are four people who have spent a lot of time digging into the numbers and working with the people behind the real estate market. We got Tony Messia, executive editor of the Charlotte Ledger Business Newsletter, Chuck McShane, director of market analytics at CoStar, Charisma Sutherland, president of Canopy, the Charlotte Region's Realtor Association, and Andy Dirkschneider-Bliss, president of the Home Builders Association of Greater Charlotte. Thank you all for joining us. So, let's start with a look at the residential side of things. Charisma, I get the Canopy news releases every month with data on the housing market, and I feel like it's a bit of deja vu. Every month, it seems like we have prices going up, demand remaining high, inventory stabilizing. In November, the average home sales price in the Charlotte region was just over $487,000. How do you describe the state of the real estate market now, and how does it compare to a few years ago?
All right, good morning. The state of the real estate market, people are constantly asking, are we in a buyer's market? So let me start out by saying we are still in a seller's market. So I like to make that very clear because I have the media calling me all the time. Is it a seller's market? No, we are not in a seller's market. So inventory has been up a little bit, which has given us some relief, a little bit of relief. But we still need more inventory. And so at this point, our inventory, we're sitting at about 2.6, 2.7 months of inventory. So, and in the Mecklenburg County market, we're sitting at 2.2 months of inventory. When we get to 4 months and above, that's more when we start to turn into a little bit more of a buyer's market, more balanced market. So again, we are definitely in a seller's market. So with that being said, with you still not having enough inventory, it still makes the price of the home to be a competitive pricing. So that's what you're starting to see.
And at, a few years ago, we fell below 1 month's inventory, which I believe is the lowest it's ever been in the Charlotte region. A more typical balanced supply, something like 4 to 6 months. Is that right?
That's correct. That is very correct. And a lot of people think that that happened just in COVID. So what happened is we were starting to get low in inventory from 2019 to March of 2020. So right at the start of the pandemic, Mecklenburg County only averaged 2 months supply. This is pre-pandemic. So when you go back and you look at those numbers, we were already getting low in our inventory. And then, of course, you went in 2020, we averaged 1.5 months of supply. So with that, that's what you saw. You saw the pent up and then demand where people were like, I don't want to move or I want to move. And that's what caused the inventory to be really low. So, but I think we're getting to a little bit better place. Like I said, to have maybe about 2.6 months, we definitely are giving people a little bit more options and an opportunity to look at a house instead of writing a contract within 4 hours of seeing a home. You get a little bit more time to really look at a few homes and make a decision and do your due diligence.
And so, Andy, your group represents home builders and people who are making up some of that inventory shortfall. Why has home building not caught up yet and closed that gap? What are your members seeing out there, and what does the data show us?
Sure. It would be really challenging for us to alone make up that gap. New homes make up, depending on the market, somewhere between 5, 10, 15% of the total market share, it's more like 5%. So new home construction is not what's going to make up that gap. It's all of the used homes. It's all of the inventory where people are locked in, staying in place, not moving. It's those individuals who are in their starter home or maybe their first move-up home and aren't moving because of interest rates. Our members are doing what they can to add to inventory. We are doing our best, but we can't make up the shortfall. I haven't seen a recent statistic, but I think it's something like 200,000 homes shortfall in the greater Charlotte area. And we can't build that many homes. Every year, we're averaging about 15,000 permits. We're not going to bridge that gap. But to that point, we are trying to add more inventory to the market. We are trying to point that is not being included right now. As you said, the average house price has gotten higher and higher. So new home construction is trying to get that first-time buyer into a home in the 300,000s. But there's a lot of things that are up against us in that, NIMBYism being one of them. The UDO is doing a lot to try to make it easier, but also make it harder to build that entry-level home, where it's a lot of challenges.
Yeah, so we're already getting into alphabet soup territory, which is one of the dangers in real estate and talking about it. The UDOs, the city's Unified Development Ordinance, which was passed a couple years back to update the zoning codes. One focus of that was trying to make it easier to build denser housing in existing neighborhoods. Tony, are we starting to see any effects from those regulatory changes? I know that at the Ledger, you've written about some of that and also some of the pushback.
Yeah, I think we're starting to see, a little bit of that. As you mentioned, Eli, the intent of the Unified Development Ordinance was to try to create more dense housing that's, maybe appropriate for a city the size of Charlotte. Create some more housing units, make that housing more affordable. It's still a little bit early, and I think builders and developers are still trying to figure out a lot of these regulations. I think really some of the bigger forces at play are, as Charisma mentioned, some of the interest rates, which a lot of people that are in their existing houses, if they bought a house in 2021, say, or they refinance, they have interest rates on 30-year mortgages that are in the maybe the 2.5% percent range. Mortgage rates are now pushing 7%. That's causing a lot of people to sit on their houses and not move. And then also, construction costs, material costs, labor costs, those are high. It's becoming difficult for home builders to really build those starter houses. Those numbers don't work and maybe as well as they used to. And you're just seeing this in a lot of places. It's not just Charlotte. And I would have also mentioned land prices. Land prices have gone up. Home builders that I've been talking to, they say it's hard in Mecklenburg County to find available land to build houses. So, you used to have large national home builders that would come in. They could build 700, 800 houses in, say, in Steel Creek or University City. Those large tracts of land largely not available in Mecklenburg County anymore. So that's pushing a lot of the development out into the suburbs where a lot of the growth is occurring.
And you mentioned, and Andy mentioned as well, the kind of phenomena of people being locked in. I can speak from personal experience. We were really fortunate to refinance and get one of those sub 3% mortgages, back a few years ago. And when you look around and think about, oh, maybe, you start clicking around Zillow or whatever, and you look at what it would be for the exact same house with the exact same everything we did, but with current mortgage rates, we'd be paying, double every month. How much of
Oh yeah, I
that?
mean it would be
Yeah.
thousands of dollars more. I mean it might be a seller's market. Sure, you could sell, but where are you going to buy is
Yeah.
the issue.
And Charisma, how are you dealing with that when you're talking to people who are in that situation and maybe saying like, "Hey, I'm ready to sell, but I'm not ready to move to, Podunk. I'd like to live somewhere comparable."
Well, we always try to find what is their motivation for wanting to purchase, to sell and purchase. Some people have motivations. They want to downsize or go to a 55 plus community. Some people have married. Some people are even have to, they have the need to have their family members, their aging parents, move in with them. So sometimes people are like, it is cheaper for me to buy a home, a different type of home at a 6 or 7% interest rate to be able to bring a parent into my home than pay for that type of a living assistance that they would need in another place. It became cheaper. So because people have gained so much equity in their homes, they're able to sell their homes and they're willing to roll that money into another home. So it just depends on what people's needs and motivations are for. So everybody has different needs why they are willing to release the 2 and the 3% and even 4% interest rate homes to move for something else.
Well, I think my mom is probably listening. I don't want her getting any ideas, but that is a real scenario that people talk about. And Andy, I wanted to circle back to from the builder's side. You know, a few years ago, we were hearing a lot about material costs, inflation, and labor costs just going through the roof. We've been hearing a lot about inflation on the consumer side in the last year, but I feel like the, discussion we were having a few years ago has kind of gone away. What are your members seeing? Are prices at all stabilized for things like building materials and labor that go into creating houses, or are they still shooting up?
So they're largely stabilized depending on which material you're talking. Like lumber is a commodity. You can follow the commodities market to see where that's going. Same with steel. Labor continues to increase. But when you talk about inflation, people like to think that when inflation slows, that prices go back down. That's not the case. And that's very much what's happened with our materials. They shot up during COVID. They did not come back down. They just stopped increasing as quickly. So, in previous years, when we could build at a much more affordable rate, the cost has stayed just as high. It's just not accelerating as quickly. And Tony mentioned land prices. Land prices are out of control, and that's 20 to 25% of the cost of the home is the lot that the house sits on. With all of those continuing to stay at an elevated price point, you can't build more affordable houses. But yes, they have largely stabilized. We are still getting price increases, but it's more like it was historical, where it was on an annual rate, not on a monthly rate like we were seeing during COVID.
And with the incoming Trump administration, there's a lot of discussion about tariffs on materials, from Canada. I know a lot of lumber comes from Canada, deportation and tightening immigration, which a lot of the construction workforce is immigrants. Are your members worried about that? Watching warily, what are you seeing and hearing?
Extremely worried about it. Tariffs are so detrimental to home building when we are trying so hard to keep costs under control. Tariffs will add a lot to the bottom line cost of a home. We're really, really concerned about that. Canadian lumber is not something that impacts the Charlotte market tremendously. It does impact other markets. So that's not one that our particular members are really concerned about it, but there is a national trend that we have to keep an eye on. But deportation is something we are concerned about. And it's not necessarily that the individuals who are building homes are not here legally. It could just be that increased fear that is causing people to be a little more concerned about being out on a job site and being out and about.
Well, after the break, we'll talk more about Charlotte's apartment market and why we've seen rent go in a direction that it hasn't in a long time, down. That's coming up next on Charlotte Talks.
Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, focused on applying Mazda's customer-centric approach for vehicle design to car buying and servicing in order to create an experience centered around the customer. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.
It's Charlotte Talks on 90.7 WFAE. I'm Eli Portillo, in for Mike Collins, and today we are breaking down the real estate market, what we've seen this year, and what might be ahead. Chuck, I wanted to start with you coming out of the break here. I think it gets lost in a lot of our discussions about housing that, in Charlotte, somewhere close to the neighborhood of half the people in this city rent, 45%-ish. There have been a lot of apartments under construction in Charlotte, 16,000 or so units completed last year, up from 8,500 2 years ago, and it's been enough to nudge rents down. So what does the data show, and what are we seeing?
Well, I think this has been a historic expansion of the apartment inventory. If you think about some of the same issues that are affecting the home building industry are rolling over into the apartment industry. I think one of the factors that's driving the decline in rents now is the expansion of supply. If you go back to 21, 22, we had a record level of demand for apartments, record low vacancy rates in the apartment industry, which led to a lot of groundbreakings at that time. Those are now coming due. Those are now delivering. It takes between 18 months and 30 months to deliver on an apartment complex. And we that's why we saw this record amount of new deliveries in 2024. There are really two times in recent memory where rents have declined in Charlotte. That was post Great Financial Crisis, 2009 and 2011. And over the last 18 months, 2009, 2011 was very much a demand story. We had negative demand, so negative absorption. More people were moving out or consolidating than were signing new leases. The opposite is true now. It's entirely a supply story. We're probably going to end 2024 with as strong demand as we've ever seen in the Charlotte market for new apartment units and living. A lot of that has to do with the price of owning a home that's gone up. The delta, the difference between monthly cost of owning a home and renting is now about 30% cheaper to rent than to own, which is roughly, if you go back, it's really driven by insurance cost, interest rates, mortgage cost. So that's holding demand relatively steady in the apartment market, but it's just not enough to match the supply that's out there. And that's so we think of it being a seller's market in the for sale industry. It's very much a renter's market in the apartment industry right now. How long that lasts is probably not going to be much longer, because we have seen the number of new projects breaking ground today really come down, down in about a half from what they were in 2022 compared to 2024. So that market's going to tighten up again heading into 25 and 26.
So given that 18-month to 30-month lag time between when an apartment project breaks ground and when it's completed and people can move into the apartments, you said we're seeing the glut move through the system now, but if there's less being constructed now, less fewer groundbreakings, et cetera, it sounds like you're saying we might be at a peak and that inventory expansion is going to slow in the next few years. So maybe we'll be back to the rising rents and the story we saw before that, driven by demand.
That's correct. We're seeing a peak now. Rents have already started to come back up a little bit in some submarkets. Rents are down peak to trough about 5%. But we saw 22,000 new units break ground in 2022. We've seen about 9,000 so far in 2024. We'll probably close the year out with about 10,000. So a significant decline that's going to mean a significant decline in new deliveries heading into 26 and 27, which is going to reduce the amount of competition between these units and bring rents back up.
And one thing I wanted to talk about a little is the effect of interest rates, not just on home buyers, which we talk about a lot, but also on people building apartments and for sale homes. Like all commercial builders, like all businesses, they are seeing the impacts as well when they take out a loan to start a new project. What kind of impact are these higher rates having on future projects? Are there more projects, a lot more projects that don't pencil out that might have before in a, 2-3% interest rate environment?
Absolutely. And that's really what we saw in 2022 when we saw that record amount of groundbreakings. A lot of that was the lower cost of capital to get those projects started. And that's keeping those projects from breaking ground today. We started to see a little bit of loosening in interest rates in 25 that may allow for more of those projects to pencil. But in general, that interest rates are a big driving factor of lower groundbreakings.
Tony.
Yeah, I just wanted to mention, I mean, this is really, as Chuck pointed out, a reversal for Charlotte, which is really used to seeing a lot of these cranes in the sky everywhere. I mean, those have largely gone away. I think you have seen a lot of these projects that have been announced and that have been on the books for a number of years that still haven't broken ground. I mean, you think of the Brooklyn Village development, uptown. You think of the planned the residential tower at the site of Price's Chicken Coop in South End. I mean, there are any number of projects I think that we could all point to that are out there that developers want to develop, but they can't get that financing that you're talking about, Eli, that the numbers just don't work in the current rent environment.
And since this is a real estate show, we have to use the term pencil out because that's what developers are always saying. So just wanted to explain that for people who are listening and maybe wonder what that means. And Charisma, how have surging rents in the past few years and this slowdown in rent growth over the more recent time frame, how are you seeing that influence buyers? Are you getting clients, now who are saying, well, the rent's a little more reasonable, the home prices are going up, so maybe I'll hold off a bit. Is that factoring into their calculations?
For some people, but some people are really, really starting to understand that purchasing a home is building wealth over time. They were able to see this happen right in front of them in the last 4 years. So it's not something we talked about 20 years ago. You're able to keep a property and you see appreciation. People saw the appreciation in the last 2 to 3, 4 years. So the millennials are definitely wanting to purchase homes now. They are saying, yeah, the rent is a little bit better. It does cost a lot to own a home, but I want to gain wealth. And the best way for me to gain wealth is through real estate. So, really, I just think it's setting expectations. A lot of people are coming from those new apartments, South End, or different parts of uptown. So they're just realizing, hey, this is another way to invest in my future and for me to go ahead and do that. So that's one of the good things. Even talking to Andy, she's trying to get products online and at $300,000 price point that are new. It's new construction. So that helps meets the demands for people used to living in new construction and new modern things, but have an opportunity. And just for you all to know, our NAR, National Association of Realtors, named Charlotte to be one on the top 10 list of cities coming out in 2025. So all this, we thinking about apartments and shortage. I think our inventory is going to be short again because there are going to be a lot of people attracted coming to Charlotte after seeing that report. They're saying our job growth is stable. They're actually saying because of our MSA area of Charlotte, which includes different counties, that they're actually considering our MSA still very affordable. I know it's hard to say that for those that live in the city of Charlotte, but our MSA, makes up Alexander and Anson County, Cleveland, different things, Catawba. So you're going to see a whole lot more growth when they see that statistic and that report comes out for Charlotte being noted.
And Andy, Charisma mentioned the price point of a lot of the new houses and new construction. You talked about how higher costs have driven that price up necessarily. What can you tell us about what that new product, those new homes look like on average? Are the builders you work with and represent interested in building the, sub 300 starter home, or is that a product that in Charlotte doesn't work anymore?
So, as the president of the Home Builders Association, I represent about 1,500 members. We are the third largest in the nation. There are any number of different types of builders that are part of our association. Myself, I'm the president of Brookline Homes. We're a local home builder. My company specializes in first-time buyers, and the only way that we are able to hit that 300,000 price point is by being outside of Charlotte proper. And like Charisma is saying, it means going to those outlying counties. We build a lot in Gaston County. We build in Huntersville, if you're in Charlotte proper, it's really hard to hit that. But how a lot of builders are obtaining, building at that lower price point is density. And I know that that got mentioned previously in the segment, but that is looking at townhomes rather than single family homes. It's also looking at smaller lot sizes. While the homes that were being built in the 50s and 60s were looking at more like half acre, third acre, and you are still seeing that in many counties, if you're going to build a more affordable product, you're looking at a 50 foot wide lot or a 60 foot wide lot rather than these giant yards. That's not historically what we are seeing in the market, but that is where we are moving, and that is how we are able to get that lower price point because the density is so critical.
And Tony, I think you wanted to jump in there.
Yeah, I was just going to point out that point on the townhomes, that in 2023 in Mecklenburg County, for the first time, you saw the number of building permits for townhomes surpass that of single family detached homes, which is really a change. And it does indicate some of that density, I think, that we've been talking about that you're seeing, you know, within Mecklenburg County, that you know, the builders and developers are getting kind of creative. And even on small lots, you know, lots as, you know, as small as, say, you know, third of an acre, 4/10 of an acre, they're putting in, maybe they're putting in duplexes, maybe they're putting in, you know, three detached houses. So, you know, it's a different way historically, you know, of you know, than that, you know, of what we're seeing, you know, some of this density, you know, coming in Mecklenburg County, at least. I think we're still seeing a lot of those single family homes in the outlying counties, but certainly a big trend is the townhome trend.
Yeah, jumping back in on that, I think it's really interesting watching townhomes become more prevalent in this market. I think it's an indication too of Charlotte growing up. On the national scale for East Coast cities, we are on the younger side, but if you go to like a Boston or Philadelphia or New York City, the brownstones are very, very common. Like that is what you see in your city. And we are now reaching that point where that's what we're getting in Charlotte as well.
And Chuck, what can we say about trends in the Southeast and it's kind of our peer Sunbelt cities when it comes to apartment construction, when it comes to rent, and you know, also home building permits? Are we in line with our peer cities, or are we an outlier in any way?
From the apartment perspective, we are definitely following trends in the Sun Belt. And at points, we have been an outlier in terms of the total number of units under construction. I believe the last I looked at this in terms of a percentage of inventory that we were seeing under construction, we were between one or two, battling that out with Miami, Austin, and a few other places. But this is a broader trend that we're seeing in the Sun Belt, places where it's easier to build, where you've seen a lot of population growth, where you've seen a lot of household growth. A lot of new supplies come online in the last 2 years, and you've seen rents stabilize or start to come down.
And, you know, we've been talking about the for-profit industry, but also wanted to take a second here and acknowledge former President Jimmy Carter's death. Of course, he did a ton of work with Habitat for Humanity, and including one of their largest projects in Optimist Park in 1984. Here is Carter speaking about that project. We were the third city for the Carter Work Project.
I think the whole neighborhood and maybe the whole city of Charlotte and a lot of other communities will be more aware of the needs of the homeless and also aware that people that are fortunate can actually do something about it.
And that sound is from the American Archive of Public Broadcasting. Looking at nonprofits, looking at groups like Habitat for Humanity, it's a smaller number of homes, and you know, a lot of the big projects, including some of the ones that you mentioned, Tony, like Brooklyn Village, include some housing set aside for people, lower income folks. Are those kind of projects enough to make a difference and impact in affordability? Or, you know, I get the sense when you talk about a 200,000 housing unit deficit overall, that you know, maybe we're just talking about a drop in the bucket.
I mean, I would say, yeah, I mean, every little bit helps. I mean, it's not going to solve the problem single-handedly, but I think everybody realizes that this issue of affordability is one that everybody has a stake in. And so everybody sort of needs to pitch in and do their part. Nonprofits are a big part of that. I mean, I also think of a lot of these developments where developers are building apartments. The city, shall we say, very strongly encourages them to have an affordable housing component, to work with, you know, Inlivion, which is the former Charlotte Housing Authority, to provide affordable units or workforce housing units, where certain units are set aside for folks with, that have lower than average household income. So if you look at the numbers, I think it's the nonprofits are not accounting for a lot relative to the size of the problem, but it certainly is helpful.
And I'm curious too about this idea of a starter home or even an affordable home. You know, for so long we've talked about like a sub $300,000 price point, and that's kind of, you know, for a single family home gone in the city of Charlotte. Charisma, Andy, I'm curious if people have adjusted expectations, if those have caught up with where things are now. Because I remember, 5 years ago when my wife and I were looking for our first house, the numbers we saw, they would be shocking today because they look so low. Have expectations caught up to match the reality of where we are now when you're talking with buyers? Or are people still like, no, I want to live in Charlotte and buy a $250,000 single family house?
I can start out. Yes and no. I'm going to say yes, it has caught up. We tell people if it existed, we would show it to you. But unfortunately, it does not exist. And we're telling people, I set expectations up front. You know, can you not travel from Cabarrus County? Can you not travel from Gaston County? And a lot of these people, believe it or not, when you begin to talk to them, don't even have to be in the office all the time. It's just resetting expectations. So people are still, I keep them focused on, you are building wealth. So knowing that, they are willing to go out a little bit.
And that's Charisma Sutherland, who's president of Canopy, Charlotte Region's Realtor Association. You mentioned remote work, and after the break, we will look at what the distressed state of the office market might mean for residential real estate and what changing work patterns do as well.
Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, focused on applying Mazda's customer-centric approach for vehicle design to car buying and servicing in order to create an experience centered around the customer. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.
It's Charlotte Talks on 90.7 WFAE. I'm Eli Portillo, in for Mike Collins, joined by Tony Messia of the Charlotte Ledger Business Newsletter, Chuck McShane, Director of Market Analytics at CoStar, Charisma Sutherland, President of Canopy, the Charlotte Region's Realtor Association, and Andy Dirkschneider-Bliss, President of the Home Builders Association of Greater Charlotte. We're talking this morning about the real estate market in 2024 and what's ahead. So when I moved to Charlotte in 2009, it was just before the start of what ended up being a big boom in office construction. Still, we were coming out of the recession then. But in the following decade, the skyline was really transformed from South Park to South End to Uptown. Now, though, post-COVID, a lot of those buildings are empty, especially older buildings. Last month, an Uptown office building sold for about a quarter of its estimated tax value. Tony, tell us about that.
Yeah, the Wake Forest Charlotte Center building on College Street, I think, is the one you're talking about, mm-hmm. Eli, where, yeah, it was one of the most vacant ones that was there. It was about 90% vacant, a little bit north of that. It used to be Bank of America used to have a bunch of offices there. Bank of America moved out. The owner of the building stopped making the payments, and basically it wound up selling a couple weeks ago for, like you said, a quarter of the original assessed value. So that's a problem for tax rates, I think. And you're going to see that, I think, a lot in a lot of these older office buildings. You have a lot that are vacant or majority vacant. The vacancy rate in Charlotte on office is somewhere between 20-25%. That's Certainly the highest it's been in the last decade plus. And so it's an issue, that I think a lot of local policymakers and developers are trying to get their heads around. I don't know that there's a great silver bullet solution, but I think you're going to see, see some more of these sales that are a fraction of the previous price. And so, again, this is something that Charlotte really hasn't dealt with a lot, is these declining price values. You like to think of real estate as always appreciated and always going up. That's certainly not the case here.
And Chuck, what does the data show us about areas that might have more difficulty with office market, office building vacancies, and those empty buildings where maybe people are not ever coming back regularly post COVID?
Yeah, I think 2025 is going to be a year where those buildings get sorted out, where we figure out which buildings, which of the older buildings do have a future, which don't, which may have a future at a very low, much lower valuation that they did before the pandemic. I mean, if you look at the office market in terms of leasing, we did see a little bit of stabilization in 2024 in terms of the properties and absorption that we're seeing companies renew. We're past the initial shock of the pandemic, but we do still see buildings built before 1990 in a 30 to 40% vacancy range, particularly in areas like Uptown and in some suburban markets like the University and elsewhere. So while we're at a more clear, we have a more clear picture of what office demand is going to look like going forward, and we're not going to see a lot of new supply to compete with on the supply side. Those older buildings, there's a subset of buildings, particularly in Uptown, that are going to be an issue, and they may be functionally obsolete going forward.
Well,
and Eli, I'd just like to point out also that, the owners of these buildings and the developers like to say that it's really just the older office buildings built in the 70s and 80s that maybe don't have the current amenities. And they say that the newer office buildings, that there's still a very high demand for those new office buildings. Although I would point out, you're not seeing, as Chuck mentioned, really construction of a lot of those newer office buildings, but that it's sort of a tale of two office markets, to hear them describe it.
Yeah, absolutely. Uptown post 1990 buildings are about 10% vacant. Pre 1990 buildings are closer to 40% vacant. So it's a big divergence.
Wow. Well, as an aging millennial, I really hate to hear that things born before 1990 are functionally obsolete, but I understand the feeling.
Oh, incidentally, Eli, the new term is vintage office. I've heard that one a few times. They're referring to it as vintage office, not older office.
Ah, okay. Vintage. Well, I don't know if office space ages like wine, but that's good to know. And this all matters, as Tony was saying, because of tax rates, not just because we should feel bad for older office buildings or people who own them and might be taking a haircut on their valuations. Property tax is the biggest slice of revenue for all of our local governments. And, it's a pie where residential is somewhere around 2/3 of that pie. And depending on the municipality, commercials and another 1/3. So if that office market, value crash continues, local governments are not just going to say, okay, adjust our tax or adjust our spending downward to compensate. The residential slice of that property tax pie is likely to increase just as a function of math. Is that right?
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, you saw that in the last revaluation in Mecklenburg County in 2023, where you had commercial properties that overall increased in value, but they didn't increase in value as much as the residential properties. And so you have more than 90% of residential property owners in Mecklenburg County have their taxes go up. So, if those commercial properties stay the same or go down at the same time that residential properties are going up in value, then that just means more of the burden of taxes is going to fall on the residential property owners.
And, Chuck, I feel like in the past decade, we were hearing all the time about brick and mortar stores and dying malls and retail really being the commercial property sector that was struggling. Now it feels like you don't hear that much about that anymore, and it's all office buildings that are struggling. You think that's a fair characterization of those different submarkets?
I would say that's fair. I think part of the comparison that we're seeing now is that maybe office is the new retail. Prior to post Great Recession in 2009, 2010, you started to see a real decline in speculative retail building. The banks were much more conservative on what they would lend to build new retail. And so we saw a process by which there was a lot of pain getting to this place, but we saw a process where all this old retail was backfilled. There wasn't a lot of new competition for retail. And so retail vacancy rates are now at record lows. We've seen a few closures in 2024 that have loosened up that vacancy rate a bit. But it's an incredibly tight market. We were talking just 10 years ago about the retail apocalypse. So from a positive side or a positive angle on what's happening in the office sector, we could potentially see this lack of new construction, demolition or conversion of older obsolete space, and maybe we're having a different conversation about office in 5 to 6 years on what the office market looks like. But there's going to be some pain to get there.
And so the flip side of remote work is if people are not working in office buildings, they're generally working in their homes. Charisma, you mentioned this, that, sometimes when you start working with a buyer, you discover, oh, you actually don't even have to go to the office. You've got a lot more flexibility about where to live. Are you seeing that as a really regular feature now of people saying, hey, I thought I was going to live in Charlotte forever, but now maybe Avery County would be nice to look at.
I'm definitely starting to see that. I won't say they are fully 100% remote, but they're saying they're doing the office 2 to 3 days a week, and they are able to go out a little bit further to get what they desire. So there has been, exchange, and they were like, they basically like, I could stay in Charlotte and still have a 30-minute commute. So why not go out a little bit further, maybe add another 10 minutes to my commute and get exactly what I want? So they definitely are trading that.
And Andy, another aspect of this that I think is interesting is the effect that, the idea of thinking of your home as also a permanent workplace can have on what you need to build in your home. How have the last few years changed how you approach building homes and what your clients want when it comes to features for a place where they might be working 3 to 5 days a week?
Absolutely. The need for in-home office space has certainly increased. A lot of people, when they had their children doing schooling from home as well, they wanted more dedicated space for doing school programming and any of that. So that has changed a little bit what people are looking for. Historically, you were saying, I need room for my bedroom, kids' bedroom, guest bedroom, whatnot, but now office is being part of that. A lot of people are looking for dedicated office space. That is meaning that we're getting more questions about is fiber available here, or what kind of infrastructure is there? Is there a quiet space? It's changed a little bit, but to Charisma's point, there's a lot of people who are remote or hybrid, but there's a lot of people who are still going into the office. But that has changed commute times a little bit, and I think it's impacted where people are looking too. Whereas historically, growth in Charlotte was north and south, and now you're seeing it east and west as well. We build a lot in Gaston County, and there's definitely been an increase in Gaston County. You've already seen a lot heading out towards Monroe, and instead of everything just being north and south, you are seeing a lot more growth in the other directions as well, and changing how people are looking at the neighborhoods and commute time as well.
And Chuck, you mentioned converting some of these older office buildings to other uses. I know the Wake Forest building is, I think, being converted to a hotel. A former Duke Energy office building on Church Street's planned to become apartments. With all these older buildings, are you expecting to see a lot more of that? Or, I've also heard about challenges from the way they're built that might make it really hard to convert them to some kind of living space.
So the ones that where there's a clear smaller floor plates. Some of the even older buildings, like the Johnston Building right now, 1924, I believe, is being converted into a boutique hotel. Where that's possible, where they can get a lower price for it to fund a renovation project, I think that will happen. I don't think it's a solution for every building, certainly not the larger, older 1980s buildings where you have very deep floor plates and not a lot of natural light, and there's a real high cost to redevelop. But there's definitely some opportunity there. There's a lot of opportunity in the suburbs as well for these older office campuses where it's demolition costs are a lot lower. You have a little more parking space to play with, to make convert into a mixed use area. So I think you'll see a lot of that, and you may see some increasing demand to Charisma and Andy's points of more living happening and more housing going into these further out suburbs. You may start to see more demand for office space follow as well in the suburbs. So I see that as a boon for office submarkets like the airport's office submarket near Gaston County and Ballantyne as well, down toward the south.
So we've got about 4 minutes left here, and I wanted to, since we're in the second to last day of 2024, end with some crystal ball gazing, some predictions about office, retail, residential, apartment, whatever real estate sector tickles your fancy, for the coming year. So what are the biggest trends that you're going to be watching in 2025, and maybe a prediction for where the real estate market is going? I'll give you a second to think about that. And who wants to start?
I can start from the office market perspective. I think we're at a new point of stabilization. So I don't expect vacancy rates to rise much in 2025. I don't expect them to fall much either. I think we're at a point where two-thirds of the leases that are now occupied were signed post-pandemic. So we're in the new normal. So we're back to basics, back to fundamentals. It's going to really depend on job growth.
All right, I'll go next. I'm going to say interest rates. I think those are going to play a big role in sort of what we see as far as some of the recovery in these markets. I mean, the number of home sales the last few years has been kind of going down. That started to reverse a little bit the last couple of months. I think we probably will see a rebound on the residential side, but I think a lot is going to have to do with interest rates. I think a lot of people feel like, oh, these interest rates will continue falling and then we'll get back to where we were. I don't think that's going to be the case. I think it's going to be better than this year, but I don't think it's going to be gangbusters.
Andy?
Yeah, I agree with Tony. I think we're definitely entering a stabilization period. I don't think interest rates are going to fall tremendously. They might come down a little bit. They might go up a little bit. But I think it's just readjusting those expectations and people getting comfortable that this is what interest rates look like now, and getting comfortable with buying a house at the interest rates that we're at right now.
And Charisma.
My prediction is definitely the interest rates. You'll see them probably stabilize in the second half of the year, maybe in the 6% range, the lower 6%. My prediction is people think that the prices are going to bottom out on homes. That is not going to happen. If you look at our stats from our Canopy MLS, our average price of our home has increased. So for that prediction, I want to tell people, do not wait. The more you wait, the more prices increase. Even though you're seeing price reductions, does not mean the home pricing is decreasing in our Charlotte area. So please go out, buy a home, not just because I'm in real estate, but it is the best way to build wealth.
And I was going to say, I was going to ask, is 2025 a good year to buy a house? And then I realized, well, you're a realtor. It's always a good year to buy a house, right?
I'm going to say that, like I said, some people keep thinking we're going to go back to 2007 or 8 or something like that. We do not see that in our numbers. We've talked to the economists. Nobody is predicting that to come. So I am going to definitely say from year over year, seeing the growth of the average price home in Charlotte, it has grown. So I would always tell you to go ahead and purchase. And the wintertime is a great time. Don't wait to the spring when everybody wants to jump in there and buy it, because that's how you can get into bidding wars and prices will increase themselves.
And that's Charisma Sutherland, president of the Canopy Realtor Association. We've also been joined by Chuck McShane, director of market analytics at CoStar, Andy Dirkschneider-Bliss of the Home Builders Association of Greater Charlotte, and Tony Messia from the Charlotte Ledger. Thank you all for the hour. I'm Eli Portillo, in for Mike Collins. This is Charlotte Talks on 90.7 WFAE.
Charlotte Talks with Mike Collins is a production of 90.7 WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from Mazda of South Charlotte. Our executive producer is Gabe Altieri. The senior producer is Sarah D'Elia. We have production help from Gene Davis, Chris Jones, and Jesse Steinmetz. For information on Charlotte Talks, to listen to past episodes, or subscribe to the Charlotte Talks podcast, visit WFAE.org/Charlotte Talks. Additional support for WFAE programming comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, a private corporation funded by the American people.
Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, using Mazda's customer-centric approach to cars to create a car buying and servicing experience where the customer is the center of their business. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.